Moving away, the men found things to do with themselves. Some smoking, some opening up cans of sea rations, a few just standing in the rain. For all of them, it was a relief to have it finished. There was the promise now of finding a hooch somewhere or an abandoned pagoda where they could strip down and wring out their fatigues and maybe start a hot fire. They felt bad for Kiowa. But they also felt a kind of giddiness, a secret joy because they were alive and because even the rain was preferable to being sucked under a shit field and because it was all a matter of luck and happenstance. Azar sat down on the dike next to Norman Bowker.
"Listen," he said, "those dumb jokes, I didn't mean anything. We all say things. Yeah, but when I saw the guy, it made me feel, I don't know, like he was listening. He wasn't. I guess not, but I felt sort of guilty almost, like if I'd kept my mouth shut, none of it would have ever happened, like it was my fault."
Norman Bowker looked out across the wet field.
"Nobody's fault," he said. "Everybody's."
Near the center of the field, First Lieutenant Jimmy Cross squatted in the muck, almost entirely submerged. In his head, he was revising the letter to Kiowa's father. Impersonal this time, an officer expressing an officer's condolences. No apologies were necessary because, in fact, it was one of those freak things, and the war was full of freaks, and nothing could ever change it anyway, which was the truth, he thought, the exact truth. Lieutenant Cross went deeper into the muck, the dark water at his throat, and tried to tell himself it was the truth. Beside him, a few steps off to the left, the young soldier was still searching for his girlfriend's picture, still remembering how he had killed Kiowa. The boy wanted to confess. He wanted to tell the lieutenant how, in the middle of the night, he'd pulled out Billy's picture and passed it over to Kiowa and then switched on the flashlight and how Kiowa had whispered, "Hey, she's cute," and how for a second the flashlight had made Billy's face sparkle. And how right then the field had exploded all around them. The flashlight had done it, like a target shining in the dark. The boy looked up at the sky, then at Jimmy Cross.
"Sir," he said.
The rain and mist moved across the field in broad, sweeping sheets of gray. Close by, there was thunder.
"Sir," the boy said, "I got to explain something."
But Lieutenant Jimmy Cross wasn't listening. Eyes closed, he let himself go deeper into the waste, just letting the field take him. He lay back and floated. When a man died, there had to be blame. Jimmy Cross understood this. You could blame the war, you could blame the idiots who made the war, you could blame Kiowa for going to it, you could blame the rain, you could blame the river, you could blame the field, the mud, the climate, you could blame the enemy, you could blame the mortar rounds, you could blame people who were too lazy to read a newspaper, who were bored by the daily body counts, who switched channels at the mention of politics. You could blame whole nations, you could blame God, you could blame the munition makers, or Karl Marx, or a trick of fate, or an old man in Omaha who forgot to vote. In the field, though, the causes were immediate. A moment of carelessness or bad judgment or plain stupidity carried consequences that lasted forever. For a long while, Jimmy Cross lay floating. In the clouds to the east, there was the sound of a helicopter, but he didn't take notice. With his eyes still closed, bobbing in the field, he let himself slip away. He was back home in New Jersey, a golden afternoon on the golf course, the fairways lush and green, and he was teeing up on the first hole. It was a world without responsibility. When the war was over, he thought, maybe then he'd write a letter to Kiowa's father, or maybe not. Maybe he'd just take a couple of practice swings and knock the ball down the middle and pick up his clubs and walk off into the afternoon.